PRN, Pause, Renew, Next, a podcast about soul care, scripture, and stories of faith. I'm Jenny Detweiler, and friends, this season on the podcast, our theme is Tell Your Story. And today is the second part of a story from a really important guest, Leah Steierwalt. If you missed last episode, I hope that you'll go back and listen to that episode. It's really key and important to what we're talking about today. In the first episode, Leah shared a lot of her grief journey, how she has been divorced and widowed twice, and now is on a journey of solo parenting four children, with an adult daughter who's now married and on her own, and some bonus kids as well. In today's episode, though, Leah is talking more about her parenting journey, what it's like being a solo parent, what it's like being a special needs parent, what it's like being an adoptive parent. The list could go on and on. You guys, Leah has so much wisdom and lived life experience, not just like head knowledge, but like in the trenches, hard stuff, you guys. And above and beyond all that, she is an inspiration and an encouragement to me, and I think she will be to you as well as you hear what she has to say. The Lord has been near to her and has gotten her through some really hard times, and I'm just so thankful that she decided to share her story with us. So with that, let's jump into the second part of this conversation. Well, Leah, welcome back to the podcast. I'm really excited to continue our conversation because I think this is a really needed conversation. So before the season began, I just kind of polled people and asked, or some of my listeners, like, what are the things this year that you would want to hear on the podcast? And one person very specifically said, I want you to talk to somebody about special needs parenting.
Oh, wow.
And there are so many different people I could ask, but many of whom are probably not in a place to speak about it right now. And so I definitely want to talk to you about that aspect. But you also know that adoption is near and dear to my heart, foster care, and so many other things that you're experiencing, and solo parenting, as you said. So there's a lot of layers.
There are.
So would you like to talk just a little bit about your journey of parenting? Well, five kids plus bonus kids, right?
Bonus kids, yes.
And four still at home.
Yes. Wow, it's a wild journey because I really did think that I was going to be old Mother Hubbard and have, you know, is it old Mother Hubbard or the old lady who lived? Yes, it was the old lady who lived in the shoe. That's who I was going to be, the woman that had so many children. And so for years when I was looking like it was only going to be one, I was, I mean, she was fabulous and great, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. But even my daughter would have told you she was lonely at times and wanted siblings, and I just felt so let down that I couldn't make that a reality. But thankfully, when I was a teenager, God had already planted seeds of adoption in my heart that I really didn't even know what all that meant. I just knew I had a passion for it. And so going through infertility or secondary infertility, as it's more widely known, those adoption seeds started to be watered again. And then I thought, maybe that's why, you know, he planted them. Maybe he wants me to walk down this path. And so having done so, I will say, before, if I'm being true to myself here, before actually adopting, I was a big old advocate for adoption. And
you're talking to her.
And I felt like, how can you not want to help children from hard places? How can you not want to open your doors, you know, to foster children for even a short term? And then reality set in. And I'm not saying adoption does not need to be shouted from the rooftops and foster care and all this. I agree. But I will have to say I have a different view now. And even then, I used to tell people that you don't want to walk into foster care blindly.
Right.
It is not for everybody. And I knew that. And not everybody's called to it. I do feel like the church is called to it in some way, shape, or form, whether that be people within the church, as in the church as a whole, fostering or adopting for that matter, or maybe you're going to be just a someone that comes alongside to support them financially, or maybe you're going to help, you know, do some short-term care. So mom and dad, you'll go through the licensing or whatever you need to do. It's different by state and by county, but to help, you know, come in, step in for mom and dad to get a needed breakaway. or maybe you're just going to, you know, help advocate, or maybe you're going to be the one that has a day for foster children to come to your church and do some fun craft activities while the parents are being given some sort of just respite in their own, you know, life. So I have a, I know all that. I do feel strongly that the church is called to it, but I don't believe that everybody is called to have foster children in their home.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe every child that is in foster care is going to end up in a home, mm-hmm. in a individual home. Right. There are some difficult circumstances that would negate that.
Right. Yeah.
But, and with adoption as well, you know, I used to know the statistics and can rattle them off. I can't anymore, but there will never, it's a very small percentage of all the orphans in the world that will ever be adopted. Maybe like in the 1% range, I think it is.
Wow.
It's very small. And I, you know, there's a lot of factors that play into that. Some of them political, you know, within the countries, if it's an international situation, expenses, you know, especially mm-hmm. domestically. All in all, I think it's true that there are children to, I think it's Karen Purvis that used yes. the coin that term, children from hard places.
That's
and
right.
I've loved that.
I love Karen Purvis.
Uh-huh. And I feel like she nailed it. That's what it is. And, there are children from hard places all over this world and they are going to need help and they do need help and they just need something good to happen in their lives. But that doesn't mean I'm the one to do it. And I certainly am not the one to do it for everybody else. And part of, I guess, my change in attitude somewhat came through walking through my own difficult uh-huh. adoption and fostering experiences that I did. Our second placement that we had in foster care ended up having to leave our home and go into a therapeutic home. We didn't want to be therapeutic foster parents. I didn't want to go through those additional training classes. And, but I still felt like a failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like I couldn't, you know, provide what this person needed. I did have a very, Pollyanna view of what I was going to be as a foster mom or adoptive mm-hmm. mom in that, well, I could pour out the love on them and whatever the wounds were, we will get through that.
That's right. So I'm just going to break yes. in here and say that I'm an adoptive mom too. And because I'm a counselor and have been trauma trained and went to Empowered to Connect conferences
Me
a couple
too.
Different times, mm-hmm. I knew what the odds were of having issues, mm-hmm. quote unquote, show up. But there was like this hope that was like, oh, but it won't happen
yeah.
to us.
Exactly.
And so I think a lot of people don't even know what they're walking into. But the ones who do, I think hope is what helps us walk through the door.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the hardship is what we have to deal with later. But
right.
there really aren't very many adoptions where there's not grief and or trauma issues that show up.
I haven't walked through that with anybody. And
uh-huh.
I have a lot of adoptive family friends now.
Right.
And I've not met one that hasn't, even if it's small, mm-hmm. That hasn't had some sort of issue come about as a result of that
right.
or the trauma.
Yeah.
And for me, like the Empowered to Connect, we attended those as well. And I was involved with the CAFO organization. And I was involved just, you know, I was a big old adoption advocate. And then became even more so initially following our international adoption experience. But then the truth began to surface. And one of the things I vividly remember in many of our classes, we were trained on reactive attachment disorder.
Right.
And how devastating that disease was. And, you know, I did the classes, I read the books, I took the quizzes, I did it all. And I knew it. I got it. I understood it. I knew RAD. I could handle RAD, you know. And, oh boy, was I wrong. Was I wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And since then, because of the country we adopted from, and I knew the statistics that fetal alcohol exposure was very strong as a possibility. I knew that in Bulgaria and Russia and Eastern Europe in general, that's a big thing. We also adopted children of Roma ethnicity, which over there are gypsy children, although that's considered a derogatory term, very racist type term. We didn't know it to be so until we went through that. But they're Roma, of Roma ethnicity. And in that country, Roma children Aroma people are not looked on very highly. And so most, I mean, Bulgaria is not a third world nation. They can absorb much of their own orphan crisis. They can adopt from within, but they don't want to if they're Roma children because of the stigma surrounding that class of people, who I think are some of the most beautiful in the world
because of their heritage. But, and their olive skin.
Oh, I know it. But even so, you know, I knew the facts, but knowing them and walking through them are drastically different. And that goes with any hard thing, but specifically for adoption, it can go along with your faith too. You can know who Christ is. You can believe he's the Son of God, but even the Bible says the demons know that and shudder, mm-hmm. you know, but knowing it and walking in that knowledge are two totally different things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that takes an act of surrender. Well, for adoption, I equated in a similar way is I knew the facts. I knew what we could potentially walk through. But like you, I just thought, well, that's not going to happen here.
Right.
You know, we're going to be in the statistics where we're going to escape that. Or should it happen, we'll love them out of it.
That's right.
You know.
Yeah.
You can't pour out enough love. And sadly, that is not the case. One of my children has been diagnosed with fetal alcohol syndrome. And that is it's much like the autism spectrum, where it's a spectrum disorder. You can be on one end of it, and that's called fetal alcohol effect, which means you've been exposed, but maybe a very small degree. And you can be on the other side, which is the syndrome. And our daughter has that. That syndrome for her led to low vision in her eyes. She cannot see. Her eyes are healthy, but her optic nerve was damaged during fetal alcohol exposure. She also is epileptic now because of that. It's all rooted in that. She's ADHD. She has intellectual disabilities. She will never live on her own. She has social issues. She is what, you know, most people would call mentally challenged. I mean, I know the politically correct terms now, but that's essentially what she is. But she's a delight.
Uh-huh.
Now, did I check that as something I was willing to take on the list of special needs we would accept for adoption? No. I didn't. Not at all. Nor fetal alcohol syndrome. But you also have to know, walking into international, you're not always going to be fed truth. Or they may not know.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think that can be true domestically as well.
Yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. So I'm not placing blame, but it's just a fact you need to be aware of, that you can say, okay, we're willing to accept these needs. You know, we checked the ADHD box thinking, okay, we'll walk on that road if we need to. We'll accept, you know, minor surgical things and that, all that kind of stuff. But I never checked the box for FAS. I never checked the box for autism. I never checked the box, you know, for all these things. And yet that's what I was given.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and she's also on the autism spectrum. So all of those things, that's just one of the four.
Uh-huh.
Then you have another one of her siblings and it was three boys and a girl, but one of her siblings, he has been diagnosed with reactive attachment disorder. He's also suspect for being on the fetal alcohol spectrum. But in all honesty, there's no need to even get that tested other than just for my knowledge, because there's no benefit in knowing that, you know, from a diagnosis standpoint. And so, but his reactive attachment disorder, I think, fuels everything. I think it fuels every behavior we see manifest in that child. He is socially awkward. He is also on the autism spectrum. That diagnosis literally just came through a couple months ago, and he's now 13 years old. And he makes impulsive decisions. He has extreme executive functioning impairment, things that just make me want to pull my hair out mm-hmm. with the things that he does. You know, I think logically. Well, he can't. He doesn't think logically.
Right.
But then there's a day, we might have a couple hours, where he's remarkable in the decisions that he makes. But then the very next hour, he's going to do something that's going to just make you scratch every part of your body because you don't understand. it's tough for me to say, why can't he just figure this out? You know, why is this so hard to understand? Some of the things we walked through a couple years ago, which was during my season of really having to face the fact that I wasn't grieving well. So that coincided, which didn't help matters. But we walked through, you know, law enforcement coming out here at least a couple times a week. And it was me calling,
uh-huh.
you know, because I didn't know what else to do. And he was only 10 and 11 at the time, or 9, I think, is when it started. And I just thought, is this going to be my path? Is this what it's going to look like? we are still walking difficult things, but I can say we haven't had law enforcement here in a couple of years. He has not had any kind of school write-up mm-hmm. in a year and a half. You know, mm-hmm. there are better days, but has it been easy? No, not at all. The other two that are at home, their needs are more minor, but they all have ADHD. Can you imagine being a solo parent with kids jumping off the walls until meds kick in? I mean, and me being that introvert who likes some quiet and needs some personal time to recharge, that's hard to carve out.
Uh-huh.
And, but these are realities. And I think a lot of times, I think the one thing, at least for families looking at adoption, first I'll address that, is that you got to be going in with eyes wider open than you think you've got. Mm. Because I certainly thought my eyes were wide open and I was so wrong. And I've been humbled, obviously, since then into all of that. That's not to say I don't love my children. And I know that this is part of what God called me to do. But I'm not saying that maybe there weren't mistakes made. Maybe we shouldn't have adopted a sibling group. Maybe it should have just been a single adoption. Who knows? That's hindsight. And it doesn't make a difference now. But those are those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I just caution people going into it, think with that Pollyanna viewpoint, that they can fix it all, because the likelihood of that is nil. And even the ones that are fixable, I hate to say, there's still possible trauma that will resurface even way later than you may imagine.
Right.
And so it's been a difficult journey. And then, of course, trying to do it as a widowed mama, and there's so much around that. I mean, I can't even have a normal job from the sense of a normal job because of all the special needs appointments that are involved in that, because of the calls from school and the pickup earlies and the, you know, occasional suspensions and things like that that we have to deal with. It's impossible. Nobody mm-hmm. would hire me mm-hmm. for that. And so to just be in and out at my, you know, whenever. So it's put a lot of difficulty on us, even financially, and trying to navigate all of that, and not having another adult in my home to bounce this off of has mm-hmm. been challenging. And so I can't imagine, I mean, even like in your case, you do have a two-parent, you know, intact home. And even that is insurmountable at times when you can bounce ideas off of each other, but when you're both exasperated and you just don't have anything left.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It doesn't matter how many people are in the home when you do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just want to say thank you for being really honest, mm-hmm. because what it seems to me is that when it comes to talking about children,
mm-hmm.
I think the special needs parents that talk about it, it's like their kids have profound special needs and it's clear and obvious.
Mm.
But the ones that have mental health issues or maybe diagnoses that are maybe negatively perceived mm-hmm. or would make them look poorly or something like that, people don't want to talk about it. And
right.
the other thing is, I've heard many adoptive parents, and I agree with this, say, like, it's not my story to tell, it's theirs. And yeah, it's also yours because you're the parent who's
exactly.
having to live it. So it can be very complicated, and I appreciate you
it
laying
is.
It out and saying that. Yeah.
And, you know, there's also seasons for the types of support. You know, I think for me, the most challenging is support, physical, human-to-human support. Because there are very few people that get it or can handle it, I should say, that are willing to, in my case, four kids here in the home, all over, I mean, 10 and over now, so we're not talking little cute preschoolers running around. I hate to say it that way, but it's the truth
true,
of the matter.
True.
And people are just not signing the list outside my door. We want to come help you here. We want to give you a night off here. We want to do this here. It doesn't happen. If it happens at all, I have to ask for it. And often I feel like I have to beg. Or if I know it's a person, I have maybe a very one or two people that I feel like would readily come help if I needed it, I feel like I can't burden those same people over and over and over. So then what do? I just retreat into myself, which is not healthy. And I don't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. I don't do anything. I will say prior to the pandemic, not that that in and of itself changed everything, but it's just the timeline and the way it happened. I made a point of trying to leave once a month for an overnight, just myself, mm-hmm. or sometimes with a girlfriend or whatever, but basically an overnight. And occasionally it would be a two-nighter, like a weekend thing, but I needed that. I needed to get away. And so I had at the time about 4 to 5 clusters of people that I could call on to come in and help. Well, then I guess that's why I liken the pandemic to it, but it was around that same time. Several of those were unmarried women who now are married and having their own children, and they're not in a place to do that. Or maybe it's people that have moved away or, you know, whatever. Life changes, you know, for people, and they're no longer available. And then I got down to where I basically had one person that was even willing to try to help. And that's when I felt like I can't burden that person. But yet it's not easy to just say, I'm looking for help. How do you advertise for that? We don't really have the extra resources financially to pay for that as often as we probably need it. And also, how do you, I guess, if it's not somebody you already know that's in your circle, then there's a factor of trust. And how do you
let somebody come in your home, yes, and care for your children?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so it has made me, I guess, become more of a homebody than I guess I would like to be. You know, it's the season we're in. And so I've had to kind of find ways to retreat, even in my home, that maybe aren't retreating to the beach or an overnight cabin in the mountains or whatever the case may be. I've had to look at other things. And I've also had to get real with the fact that, you know, this is one of those times, as I mentioned on a previous episode, where you want people to know you need them without having to ask them. But that's not. While that may be lofty and nice and mm-hmm. I really wish it would happen, that's not reality. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we have to be proactive in that. But I do believe that sometimes it's hard for, I guess I would say that if I can help another special needs family, and I have done that some in the past, with whether it be y'all go out to dinner, bring the kids over, drop them off, we'll survive. We'll be okay for these couple hours. You know, I've been able to do a little bit of that, but that's challenging to ask one special needs family to support another special needs family in that way.
But they're the only ones that get it.
But they're the only ones that get it. Mm-hmm, exactly. And so I do feel like there's more education, I guess, that's needed there, but even beyond that, you just got to have willing hands. Mm-hmm. And then when you don't find them, you can't get bitter. Mm-hmm. And you got to look at other creative ways mm-hmm. to get some help and whatever that means to retreat and what that looks like.
Yeah.
For different people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That leads me to ask some really like practical mm-hmm. things. So the first one I love to talk about soul care on this podcast. And we're talking about things that you have to do to actually survive. So not like, mm-hmm. oh, I want to go get a manicure, but right. but like, how am I going to survive today and take care of myself? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And maybe extra than that too, like maybe spiritual practices mm-hmm. and other things. What are some of the practices that you try to institute in this season of life that help you?
For me, well, one thing, you got to know yourself. So mm-hmm. that's the first thing is mm-hmm. know what fuels you and what depletes you. And for me, one of the things that fuels me is learning new skills. There is just a knee-deep need in me to just learn something new all the time. There's so many ideas I have. And I wish... I mean, I guess I've always had this personality, but I've never attempted to act on it as much when I was younger. And now that I'm halfway, probably more than halfway through my life, I feel like I'm just now getting all these, well, I want to learn to crochet. I want to learn to scuba dive. I want to learn, you know, just all these things all at once. And likelihood of knowing them all is not there. But, you know, what are the things that excite me the most? And so this is one way that technology is really helpful is I go to YouTube University. All the time. And you can find answers to things there. Some good, some not so good. But basically for anything you're looking to do, whether it's fixing a part of your car, which I have no desire to do, or, you know, laying down new flooring on your floor, which I might be willing to try, you know, those kind of things. But for me, I've always had a desire to grow my own food. And so about 5 years ago, I really started exploring, you know, gardening, raising chickens, homesteading kind of, sort of. And
and you're really proficient at sourdough.
And learning to make sourdough bread. Yeah. And now 5 years after that journey began, we haven't bought eggs in all that time. We've had some hard lessons to learn in it, especially through raising chickens. But you know, I have learned to bake sourdough. I don't buy bread anymore. I grow a lot of my own food. I've learned to can, you know, I've turned into my grandma. It's all these skills that I feel like I should have been, you know, Laura Ingalls Wilder, because that's kind of where a lot of my passions are. But because I know those are my passions, that's where I tend to focus my energy on learning those things. Because when I'm able to put that knowledge that I've gained into actual practical use, it fills me up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard work. Don't get me wrong. Canning food that you've grown in every step of the process to get to that. But wow, the accomplishment that I feel, and that's just one for me, you know. Mm-hmm. It might be, I used to, years ago, crochet and barely learned how to do it. But I loved it at the time. I'm talking 30 years ago. A girlfriend at work, she taught me on our lunch hour. And I could do baby blankets. That was pretty much the extent of it. And little tiny ones too. But I did baby blankets and basic stitching. Well, then my carpal tunnel syndrome got really bad to the point my hand would go numb. And I just kind of gave up on it and put it aside. Well, just this past year, I had surgery to fix that in both of my hands. And it dawned on me the other day, I bet I could crochet again. And so then I start refreshing my memory. How do I do these stitches? How do I do that? You know, YouTube University again, you know, realizing those things. Those are huge. And that doesn't require me to go anywhere. Technically, it doesn't require any money unless I want to start investing in crochet materials, for example. But I am fueling a deep need in me to learn something, to gain new skills, to feel useful, and in my case,
to be creative.
I was going to say, be creative. That's the other piece, because it is a way to use my hands, especially to experience that tangible, you know, creativity mm-hmm. aspect of it.
I like the words that you used, fill me up, because mm-hmm. what we're talking about is having an empty cup.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like,
yeah.
The things that we're talking about. It's like, I have an empty cup. So when I think about soul care, it really is like, what are the things that replenish me, that renew me? So that was a perfect way to say that. Thank you.
It is. And well, I don't mean it is perfect. I didn't pat myself on the back, but I get the analogy and what you're talking about, because that's essentially what it is filling back up. One thing I will say, as far as a practice, and this is a daily practice, hasn't always been, but when my first husband passed away, I had a girlfriend that every day, whether it was in person, like she was at my home, or she sent me a text or a phone call or whatever, said, have you been in the Word and have you prayed today? And me, being the people pleaser that I am, didn't want to disappoint her. So I didn't want to lie. So I made myself do it, whether I wanted to or not. But it started out where my being in the Word was maybe reading one verse from one Psalm, and that was it. That's all I had. My prayer during those, especially early days, was nothing more than, help me, Lord. And literally, that was it. But even in those short little things, I could say, yes, I have. Mm-hmm. You know, I could answer her honestly, yes, mm-hmm. I have. Well, God met me there, and eventually I read the whole chapter of that psalm. Or maybe I would get into an actual Bible study and go even deeper. My prayers grew more. I'd spend more time than just a help me, Lord sentence, you know. And I dare say that has, especially during that first season, fueled my ability to keep going, to keep taking that next step, to keep walking the steps of grief. I was not as diligent with that when Joel passed away, and it shows, and it did show. In my rehealing, sort of as I've gone through it, the second half of becoming a widow, these last 4 years rather than the first three, I employed that practice again, and it's made a world of difference. Huge. I don't feed myself in the day until I first feed on the Word. And for me, now that's not to say something could come up. I could have a sick child, you know, we may be in the bathroom all morning dealing with that or whatever. Yes, I can pivot. But my intention and my 9 times out of 10, what I do is that's how I start my day. Does it mean getting up earlier? Yes, I have to. If I don't, then the kids will be up. It'll be harder for me to concentrate. It's impossible. Some people, mornings may not be great. I'm a morning person, so it works well for me. But for some people, it might be right before you go to bed. I would never make it through it because I'd fall asleep. But whatever that case is, I have found that's huge. Even if it's your lunch hour, you know, getting into the Word, even if it's a small amount, and talking to God. For me, it's not so much down on my knees, lofty prayers, you know, okay, check the box, I'm done. It's maintaining an attitude of prayer throughout my day.
Uh-huh.
Constant communication with Him, which He tells us to pray without ceasing. And that doesn't mean on your knees all day in a holier-than-thou posture to do that. It is that you've got such a closeness that you can talk to Him throughout your day, all day, mm-hmm. just because you've got the communication lines open.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, for me, while it's seems like that's a soul care, you know, a lot of people think, well, that's obvious, we should do that. Yeah, we should, but how often do we not,
uh-huh.
you know?
Uh-huh.
And I will say from firsthand experience, it is paramount for me on the days that I do not make that priority. Even if it has to come a little later than I'd like, but on the days I don't make that priority, there is an emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
There is a dissatisfaction in the way I feel about myself and even in the way my mm-hmm. day runs.
Mm-hmm.
So that is probably the biggest gift of soul care I can give to myself is by staying true to that practice.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. And for anybody who's listening, I'm just going to throw this in here as well. I think you did a good job of talking about it, but I feel like sometimes when it comes to getting in the Word and praying, mm-hmm. it feels like a should.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I never like the word should, really, but that mm-hmm. feels like if you grow up in Christianese culture, that's what you
hear it.
Mm-hmm. But what you're saying is, no, it's like it renews my mind. Like mm-hmm. it helps me stay connected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Totally.
Uh-huh. I agree.
And I'm a reader, too, mm-hmm. anyway. And so that's another way. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, the biggest source of inspiration I get is from God's Word.
Yes.
But outside of that, He brings other things to me. And it's not always serious, you know, deep topics. It's not always nonfiction memoirs. Mm-hmm. It may just be a fun, lighthearted book or some, you know, true crime novel or whatever. Whatever the, you know, case may be, I love to read all over the place. And so I'm an avid reader. I'm also very competitive, even with myself. I'm extremely competitive. And so things like Goodreads, the app, has reading challenges. I've done them for several years now, and I went through a season of about a decade where I could hardly say, I couldn't even tell you on one hand how many books I read because I was just done.
Uh-huh.
And part of that was through some of the years of hard that I walked through. I didn't have anything left in me to just read, nor did I just have the desire.
Uh-huh.
But now it's like last year, I almost embarrassed to say how many books I read, but a lot of them are audio, I will have to say. So I'm playing them when I'm doing other things.
Yeah, it counts.
Uh-huh, it does. But it's a huge fuel thing for me. Mm. Sometimes, like I say, it can just be lighthearted, you know, and then sometimes it needs to be deeper and needs to challenge me a little bit. So I go both.
Yeah, and for anybody who's listening who maybe is going through hard things themselves, like a traumatic situation or you're in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I often say to my clients and I try to remember myself is your concentration goes out the window.
Oh, totally.
Because your brain can't do
yeah.
that. So there's mm-hmm. a reason why for those period of time you couldn't sit down with a book.
Mm-mm.
Or sometimes people can't sit and watch a movie. It's because their brain won't settle enough to
right.
do that. So if that's the case, it's not a judgment thing. I loved how you said, I just did one verse.
Right.
That's all I could do.
That's all
and
I
that's
had.
Fine. That's all. That, mm-hmm. That's all you needed maybe mm-hmm. in that season. So
mm-hmm.
yeah,
exactly.
I love that. Okay, so we did talk about ways that people could come alongside you, but can you think of any instances where somebody really did come alongside you and they were there for you when you needed them, or ways that you have been supported either by God
mm-hmm.
or by actual physical people?
Well, I think it's all been by God, but I think
yeah.
I know what you're where
yeah.
you're going with that,
yeah.
but I do think that He is directly steered people towards me or us, you know, family-wise. At specific times, I will say following Chris's death, I was a more avid blogger then. And I basically blogged about my whole first year of grief following that, turned that into a book, which I won't even mention because it needs editing so bad and reprinting. But anyway, those posts became a book that kind of chronicled that first year of widowhood. And during that season, I was able to meet a lot of people, most of them online through social media. But I made some pretty strong connections through there. And there was a woman across the country, literally, who just felt drawn to our family. And at the time, it was just my daughter and I. And she felt like she wanted to provide encouragement and blessing to us monthly for that first year. And the way she did that, she also had a blog. And so she encouraged her blog readers to find creative ways to bless us, but she kind of coordinated it. And what that looked like was like somebody sent us a gift of having high tea together at a local place that did that. And so 1 month, that's what we did. Somebody else sent us a popcorn and movie package one night in the mail. It was tangible. It was all tangible gifts, which also spoke to our love languages. My top love language, if you're familiar with those, is words of affirmation. But second would be gifts, because to me, it's a tangible expression of love. It's not that I have to have the thing, but to me, I can physically see love expressed through something mm-hmm. that you can't always feel. So yeah. I guess that's why that, but my daughter's is gifts. So that was her top thing. So during that, we were walking through that and she was not even quite a teenager yet. So you can imagine how excited she was to see how we were being blessed that day. Also during that season, my very first Christmas without him, was a huge thing that took place, but one of them was I wanted to decorate a tree in his memory. And so I reached out to my readers and social media friends and just said, if you feel led to want to donate an ornament to the Chris tree, as we called it, you know, let me know and I'll provide the address and all that kind of stuff. And I'm telling you what I have. And they, you know, I gave suggestions as to things that related to him, whether it's his hobbies or personality traits or things that were important to him, favorite scripture verses, whatever. And so the ornaments would line up with that. We got so many ornaments that we ended up with more. And I'm a Christmas junkie. I mean, I decorate way over the top, but that's just, I love it. And I have multiple trees in the home already, but that was one when we did it. I was thinking, you know, 4 or 5 foot size tree, tabletop, that kind of thing. We had to get an 8 foot tree, normal size tree, and fill it. I mean, it was full. That's how blessed we were through that. And to me, not only was the being able to see that, and we still put that tree up. I put it up again this year. And Joel has one too now. We did the same thing after he passed, but just, you can see the love on that. And I can look at those ornaments and just know this was from so-and-so who was also a widow. Aww. And she did this. And they all have meaning in one way, shape, or form. A lot of them are homemade, you know, mm-hmm. that people did. We had a secret Santa, so to speak, that kept showing. It was the 12 days of Christmas. They kept showing up at our door for 12 days leading up to Christmas. To this day, I don't know who it was. I think it may have been more than one person, but we had things show up at our door every morning for 12 days leading up to Christmas, little gifts and things, and notes would be left telling us what was happening in the process. I never could find them. The Snoopy in me wanted to see them actually show up. Mm-hmm. And it was literally just the most a magical thing an adult could experience uh-huh. at Christmas time, you know? And so those were some tangible ways. But we also had people that, you know, my husband, that Chris committed suicide. And one of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to go to the place that he was found. I was not there when he was found. And I wanted to see it. To me, it was a place to bring me closure. I had people specifically that were willing to walk that part of it with me. And it was kind of way deep in the woods. So it was not just an easy commute. Mm-hmm. So we had people walk alongside me to do that. Mm-hmm. I had a company. I needed new tires during one season and just wasn't in a place to even purchase that. And somebody knew about that need and they had a connection with a tire company. The tire company didn't know me, but the people did. The tire company donated the tires. Wow. Those are some specific ways. Following Joel's death, we've had, you know, we were in a new city and didn't know people. And social media exploded with, there's this new widow. They have, you know, they had these 4 adopted children. One of them just is turning 3 in 11 days. We had people bless us with a birthday party for him that, you know, just knew that that would be important and what we would normally do. But I didn't have it in me to plan a party 11 days after my husband passed away. I couldn't even think straight. You know, I'm a big lover of flowers, but I don't typically buy them for myself. I had flowers show up at the most unexpected times, sometimes on things like Valentine's Day, things like that, but or my birthday. But lots of times it was just a random day. Just thought you might like to have a little cheering up today.
Aww.
And sometimes I knew who it was from. Sometimes I didn't. You know, sometimes it was somebody providing a meal just because you're probably exhausted today. So guess what? Peace is on its way. Or donuts are being DoorDashed from Krispy Kreme. You know, there's so many things that we have seen that seem insignificant, but they are huge. And when God's involved, and He always is, they come at just the time that we need them.
Yeah. And one thing that we haven't talked about on here is that you are literally right now recovering from surgery, like multiple surgeries, actually.
Multiple, yeah.
Yeah. And so like the tangible things are really important. And here you've got these four children and are physically incapacitated, or you were for a period of time.
I'm just learning to walk again.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, this is real down and dirty in the trenches stuff. This is not like ephemeral, abstract.
I've had to be more vocal about my needs on this, which as I've mentioned is a very tough thing for me to do because I don't like to put people out. That's just my natural personality. And I feel like I am. And 9 times out of 10, they probably don't feel that way, but I do. So I try to put that on them. Like, you're going to feel this way. So I know you probably don't want to help me, but and it's silly, but you know, that's just the way I feel. But yeah, I was at a place I needed a total knee replacement. I'm the only driver in my home still currently, and it's my right knee, which meant that I was going to not be able to drive for several weeks. And I did a lot of work trying to prepare, trying to make life as smooth as we could, but it involved a lot of navigating. It meant I needed, while my children ride the bus, I drive them to the bus stop every morning, at least the younger two, because the bus doesn't come right to our home, and they're still young enough. I don't feel safe with them standing outside in the dark. So I needed to rectify that. What does that mean? Somebody dropping by to pick up my kids for school. That's exactly what it was. And so I had to work all that out. Somebody did that for 3 weeks, and that's huge. Just something that small, but it's all those little things. And so, yes, it doesn't end. I mean, we're 7 years into this journey, but things still are going to happen. I'm not in some, you know, I don't have this army of help just that checks in daily, but I've had to learn to ask. And I'm still not great at it, and I still will let things not be known that probably need to be. But usually, there are people there that are ready to step in and fill that need. Now, I will caution in that lots of times, and the only reason I know this is because of working in this media, but a lot of times people rely on social media too much. Where you might get in there and say, well, I've put it out there, and I've asked, and nobody's responding.
Right.
There is a real reason for that lots of times nowadays that has nothing to do with humans. It has to do with, you know,
algorithms.
And it has to do with how many people are seeing your ask and the way it's viewed and all of that. And so don't start going into yourself feeling like nobody loves me, nobody cares about me because nobody responded or liked my social media message. I think that's a dangerous place to get into.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah.
And
not only that, but there is a psychological effect of if something's happening and there's a crowd of people, everybody assumes somebody else is doing it. So if it goes out on Facebook, everybody else is assuming somebody else is doing
yes,
it.
Yes. And that's
everybody's
not true
seen
either.
It, but maybe everybody isn't responding.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. And so I just, and for me, I feel like because I've been the recipient of so much tangible love like that, I really want to give back when and if I can with whatever I have. And my tools may be different than your tools, but and my offerings may be different. But I do feel like that's another way of filling my cup is being able to help fill somebody else's. And I know that sounds like something we hear a lot, but there's so much truth in that. And to do it, I think for me, what really fuels it is to do it in a way that people don't know it's me, you know? And speaking of that, I turned 40 the year after Chris passed away. So it was a big birthday for me. And that could be a podcast in itself and all the trauma I experienced with birthdays as a child and then how I've had to get over that because they're important to me, but they weren't treated that way growing up. And now not having another adult in the home that can care for me, for lack of a better word, on a birthday or make it feel special is really challenging. It's probably one of my hardest days of the year. But, and my kids aren't old enough to really understand that or to do anything about it. But that particular year, girlfriends of mine, I guess, knew that about me, but they wanted to make it special and they had a surprise party. I have never, to this day, it was the best birthday I've ever had in my life.
Oh.
And because it fed every need of mine, you know, regarding that day. But that particular birthday, I decided what I wanted to do for myself was to do 40 days of random acts of kindness or 40 random acts of kindness. And then I blogged about it. And so I really, you know, prayed about what's this going to look like? How am I going to do this? And it turned out to be one of the best gifts I could give myself because it involved other people and feeding into other people. And some of it were people I didn't know. But like, I made a little newborn package and went to the hospital where I was born on the actual day of my 40th birthday and asked them to deliver it to a new mom.
Aww.
And for me, I never met that mom. Don't know if she had a boy or a girl. I have no idea. But it was huge to me, you know, to do that. Mm-hmm. There were, I mean, it was all different ways that I did it, but it was one of the best gifts I gave to myself. And so knowing that to this day, I find that if you're not a natural, I guess some of us are gifted with, you know, that to be able to naturally want to be a giver and just naturally think that way. I'm not. I have to really put intentionality into when I want to give. Does that mean I don't enjoy it? No, the opposite. I love it. But it's just not the place where my mind goes first.
Right.
And so I have to be more intentional about it. But wow, does it fuel me and fill me up big time to be able to do it. So I think just being able to pour into people at whatever capacity you can do is huge and will make a huge difference in walking through difficult days, especially.
So do you have any encouragement? I mean, the whole thing has been, but any specific words for somebody who maybe really is in the trenches right now with special needs parenting, with adoption, with autism or FASD or whatever their particular case looks like?
I think you got to be vocal. As much as hard as it is about your needs, you need to definitely practice soul care because some days that's all that gets me through the day. And call it what it is. Be real. Be authentic. It is hard. There are going to be regrets. Some days you're going to think, why did I ever do this? Mm-hmm. Why did I ever walk this path? And for some of you, it was nothing you chose. It just happened, you know, whether it could be a natural childbirth that led to severe special needs. A lot of women are walking through that and you did nothing. There's nothing you did wrong, but it's just what you're walking through and the road you've been asked to walk. And there will be beauty that comes out of it. Some days you're like, I don't see how, but there will be. And it is a story that you've been asked to steward. And for me, I get teary when I think of that, but I want to steward it well.
Mm-hmm.
And I make lots of mistakes and I still will, but I know that it was not given to me to just die there.
Mm-hmm.
There's something that needs to be birthed out of it. And sometimes that comes out of me and the rebirth, so to speak, that I get from it. But sometimes it'll be in the kids and sometimes it might be in somebody else. It's nothing more than a bystander watching it all unfold, you know. And so I think for me, it's all been a part of my refinement. I think as a Christ follower, you know, we're going to be refined and until the day we're called home. And so I think for me, it's revealing the ugly places in me that need to be fixed. And that's good because it's part of the refinement. It makes me more like Jesus. And that's ultimately my goal. But I think it also makes us more sympathetic and empathetic to people that have gone through those difficult things. And I think we need to remain open-handed and be willing to receive when people want to bless us. Mm-hmm. I think we need to be grace givers, not just to our special needs children or adopted children that maybe don't have special needs, but I guarantee you will have some sort of trauma surface at some point. I think we need to be grace givers to people that we feel should be supporting us and aren't, because they may not get it or don't get it yet or haven't walked through something as challenging as you. But trust me, and even I'm walking in it still, there is beauty that comes out of these ashes, so to speak. And we have to look for it sometimes. And I would encourage you to write down every one of those that you see. Because on those dark days, you're not going to remember those. But if you have a list, you know, maybe a blessing you received that day, maybe a kind word from your child. It may be somebody blessed you in some tangible way that you want to remember. Write it down. Because you will need to go back and look at that at some point to remind yourself, okay, we've been taken care of. We've been looked after. We're going to make it. And you will. You will.
Amen. That's right. And I'll say it again. Amen and amen. Thank you so much, Leah, for sharing your story with us, your wisdom, your life experience, your encouragement, and for real, your authenticity. I'm so, so thankful that you didn't gussy it up and make it sound prettier than it is. You were really honest with us, and that is so helpful. So friends, if you are in the trenches right now, I hope that Leah's story encouraged you. If you know somebody who's in the trenches right now, I hope you're praying for them and maybe even passing on this podcast. And I hope that you'll remember some of the things that Leah said might be helpful for those who are in the trenches. If Leah's story resonated with you, I hope that you'll let us know. You can drop a comment under today's show notes, or you can message me on Facebook or Instagram. You can find me at either place at Pause Renew Next. You can always find me on the website too at pauserenewnext.com. Well, that's all for today's podcast episode. I'm Jenny Detweiler with PRN. Pause, Renew, Next. May you be encouraged on your journey with Jesus.